Republicans to wake up. The Republican Party right now is not led by conservatives. There's a population out there that has to be told the truth. We have to. Do it live!
Now, from the left coast, it's another podcast edition of the Peter B. Collins Show. Peter B. is curious, opinionated, and relentless in pursuit of the truth like a honeybee drawn to pollen. He's an independent progressive, ready to sting Republicans and Democrats alike when they deserve it. After years in commercial radio, Peter B. welcomes you to this audio adventure in news and politics with no corporate filter. Listeners support this program, and you can help at peterbcollins.com. Here's your humble host, Peter B.
My thanks to Jeffrey Adair, Patricia Player, Kathleen Lowy, and Michelle L. Pasco. They are voluntary subscribers to the Peter B. Collins Show. If you're able and you'd like to help, go to my website, peterbcollins.com. Our voluntary subscriptions start as low as $5 a month. It's election time.
And I, boy, and I, a tooth for a tooth. Vote for me and I'll set you free.
We're being barraged by television ads, especially from the wealthy corporate candidates here in the Golden State of California. And today's podcast is intended for California voters. But if you live elsewhere, you're welcome to listen in and see what you think. And before we get started, I want to mention a couple of our sponsors, the Organic Wine Company. I'd like you to sign up for the Peter B. Collins Organic Wine Club. You can get the details by clicking on the link on my homepage at peterbcollins.com. That's the cute little revolving ad from the Organic Wine Company. Also, Cinema Classics is a movie company. They specialize in classic Hollywood and foreign films. Check out their 30% off sale and their great collection of old movies on DVD and VHS. And that's also on the link at peterbcollins.com. And if you'd like free shipping, and I'd like you to take advantage of that, on any order, just enter PBC in the comments section of the website order form. Well, this is quite an election season. And there's a lot at stake. The future of liberalism is on the line in the United States Senate. The expansion of corporate influence is really in sharp focus here in California. And so in today's podcast, I'm going to give you my picks on candidates for statewide office and the U.S. Senate, and on the dizzying array of ballot propositions that confront California voters. But beforehand, for new listeners and people who have not heard me talk about this before, I do not presume to tell anyone how to vote. What I will do is share with you my intentions. And they are informed by my very well-developed biases. Let me identify a few. I am not registered as either a Democrat or a Republican in California. We have a category for independents with the awkward name of decline to state. And I'm not afraid to state, it's just that's the option they give me. I'm an unabashed liberal. And we are an endangered species. I use the term progressive now because it's got marketing cachet and liberal was poisoned starting with Ronald Reagan. But I don't feel poisoned by it. And I feel proud of my convictions and my positions. And when we talk about the candidates, you will see that I generally vote for Democrats. But I'm not captive to the Democratic Party. And you will see in the state offices that I don't vote a straight party line. But in general, the Democrats give us options that are at least better than the Republicans. Sometimes by a quantum leap. Sometimes not. The other thing that I want to identify for you is that I do work on political campaigns. And let me disclose, in the year 2010, I worked for the campaign of Marin County Supervisor Susan Adams, for the District Attorney of Sonoma County, Stephen Passalacqua, who lost in the primary in June, and with a group called the Green Dog Truth Squad, I helped organize what's called an independent expenditure project in support of the re-election of Senator Barbara Boxer. So I'm more invested in that than perhaps other commentators that you might listen to, and you deserve to know that. If you'd like to look at what we did, we tried to show the truth about Carly Fiorina, the corporate challenger to Senator Boxer, a first-time candidate, never served in any office before, and didn't vote for a 20-year period from 1980 till about 2000. And I think there's a very clear choice in this Senate race, and it revolves around my very broad issues about liberal versus corporate. And we set up this independent expenditure operation. You can see it at greendogtruthsquad.com. To try to inform independent voters and some wobbly Democrats about the real risks of voting for an extremist and a corporatist like Carly Fiorina. And it has pained me that the San Francisco Chronicle, for example, said they couldn't pick one in the Senate race this year. Now, there's a new publisher there. They're leaning further to the right. And there's an internal explanation for that. But there's no excuse for them to duck a very clear choice. And I have my own issues with Senator Boxer. For example, she's too loyal to the state of Israel, like most of the members of both parties serving in Washington, D.C. But on balance, Barbara Boxer has been a leader who has spoken for me more often than not. She voted against the war in Iraq. At critical times, she voted against war funding to send a message to the Bush administration to set a timeline and get us out of Iraq. It didn't work, but she stood her ground. I respect her for that. She's a staunch supporter of a woman's right to choose, and that right is under serious assault in this year's election cycle with nutcases like O'Donnell in Delaware, Engel in Nevada, and other right-wingers who are running and appear to have a shot as Republicans in Senate and congressional races this year. Also about Barbara Boxer, she voted against the two most recent right-wing Supreme Court nominees, Roberts and Alito. She challenged Condoleezza Rice about the lies that led us into Iraq, even though Rice is a Californian and a female and, you know, political correctness might have led her to give that a pass. And on one of the most critical issues, I respect the leadership of Barbara Boxer in trying to fight for some sort of a start to reduce our carbon emissions and address climate change. And just today, and I'm speaking to you on the 21st of October, the LA Times published a piece about Barbara Boxer, described her as an extreme partisan. Well, the real partisans in Washington are the Republicans, who have been in lockstep in opposing Barack Obama's every move in trying to defeat the Democrats at the expense of the future of our nation and doing the bidding of extreme corporate interests like oil, coal, other extracting industries, and the lobbies that they buy in Washington that have sponsored so many candidates this year, the Koch brothers, laundering money through the Chamber of Commerce, Karl Rove's group, funded by just a handful of billionaires who use that money to camouflage their interests behind these nutty Tea Party candidates. And I'm sad to say that it's working. Russ Feingold in Wisconsin may lose his Senate seat. And if Boxer and Feingold both lose, we're left with only really one true liberal that I can identify these days in the United States Senate, and that's Sherrod Brown of Ohio. And so I regard the re-election of Barbara Boxer as very critical. It would be an important repudiation of corporate politics, rejecting these amateurs who want to start at the top. And we'll get to Meg Whitman in a moment. So, for me, the choice is very clear for the United States Senate. And if you're wavering in any way, I know there are a lot of people who are tired of Barbara Boxer. She's been a senator for 18 years. She was in the House 10 years before that. But put aside personality and some of the things that she's been tagged with, and reflect on what it really means to replace a strong liberal with a pro-life, pro-gun, pro-offshore drilling, corporate toady like Carly Fiorina. To me, there is just no choice. Now let's take a look at the candidates for statewide office here in California, starting with the governor's race. And here I will be candid with you that I originally supported John Garamendi for governor of California. He had the clearest position about the fiscal crisis that our country, our state finds itself in. And he was willing to confront the Republicans who answer to anti-tax leader Grover Norquist and not their own failed Republican governor, Arnold Schwarzenegger. But Garamendi, and I did work for him in the calendar year 2009 as a consultant. And at the time I went to work for him, he made the decision to abandon his quest for governor because he didn't think he could raise enough money to compete with Meg Whitman. And part of that was because Garamendi had offended bankers and insurance companies when he was the state insurance commissioner in two non-consecutive terms. And so from there, I was intrigued by Gavin Newsom, the mayor of San Francisco, who explored a run for governor and abandoned it because he couldn't raise enough money. And because Jerry Brown essentially cleared the field. And I've known Jerry Brown since the late 1980s. Interviewed him many times. Jousted with him over dinner. And I have mixed feelings about him. Particularly the way he has chosen to run this campaign by announcing last spring that he would not raise taxes without a vote of the people. And the people will not raise their own taxes. It's that simple. People will vote to raise other people's taxes. But in the climate that's been created by the Republican extremists, we see California teetering on bankruptcy, and that's a term of art because legally the state can't file for bankruptcy. But the state is financially broke. And the reason is that Republicans have obstructed every reasonable effort to increase revenues by raising taxes. And they create this whole hysteria about how California is hostile to business and it's hostile to rich people. And we've got all these frickin' millionaires and billionaires and successful businesses that have started up just in the last 5 or 10 years, like Google and Yelp and the Facebook, on down the line. Twitter's a California company. Twitter is based in San Francisco, which has a reputation of being hugely hostile to business. And so, against this backdrop, I support Jerry Brown, certainly over Meg Whitman. and I wish him the best. But he has handcuffed himself at least one wrist behind his back already by saying that we have to live within our means and will only raise taxes with a vote of the people. Schwarzenegger tried that twice, and the people rejected it. He even packaged it with, spending caps and all kinds of things to put bells and whistles on it to try to get people to support it. Didn't work. So the other, issue here is that Meg Whitman has no political experience, has rarely voted. I think she's only registered in the last 10 years and has only voted about 40% of the time or less since she registered. But she has no experience in Sacramento, no experience in government, even at the city council level. She has never, ever negotiated a labor contract, and that's one of the formidable issues confronting the next governor, who will have to push through pension reform. And so there's simply no way that one can rationalize the election of Meg Whitman, who has spent now $150 million of her $1.2 billion personal fortune to try to sell her brand and hope that the shelf life wouldn't expire before the November election. The polls show that it's not working, but Brown has a very narrow lead, and if he makes another mistake, she's prepared to pounce and spend even more to drive it like a pile driver into the ground. I want to give credit here, though, as I play the audio track from a new television commercial that the Brown campaign has released. And while I don't personally know who produced this, his media advisor is Joe Trippi. Trippi worked for Howard Dean. He's been a Washington-based media consultant for a long time. And this is the ad that I have been waiting for. Because when you compare Arnold Schwarzenegger, an amateur with no political experience, who came to Sacramento by playing the recall game, and if you want to go back a few years, when the recall qualified, it was bought and paid for by Daryl Issa, member of Congress, car alarm millionaire from Southern California, who thought that he was going to ride into Sacramento as the next governor. And Schwarzenegger schnookered him, and with his celebrity, his high name recognition, with over 130 people running for governor in that recall, he came out on top. And I don't have any personal animus toward Arnold Schwarzenegger. I give him credit for two things. The global warming initiative, the legislation called AB 32 that he promoted and signed into law that's now under assault, and we'll get to that in the initiative section of this podcast. And most recently, I learned of his role in the redistricting initiatives, the two that are on the ballot that we'll talk about also in the second section of this podcast. Those are the only two things that I can credit Arnold Schwarzenegger for. He failed miserably, and by suspending the car tax, he drove the state initially into serious debt. And then when the 2008 meltdown occurred and our housing prices dropped and revenues to the state dropped precipitously, he was really screwed, and we are screwed in turn. Let me be clear. Arnold Schwarzenegger, a political amateur and a Republican, rode into office on the same messages that Meg Whitman is attempting to use right now, because many of the same political consultants worked for both. But it's a failure. And the Brown campaign has finally launched this commercial. There's a 30-second version of it that runs on television. This is about a minute long that's on the web. And you see and hear very clearly how Arnold Schwarzenegger and Meg Whitman deliver the very same lines from the very same script. And this is a script to a really bad movie that failed at the box office up and down California.
Insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results.
Insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and hoping for different results.
I've built businesses.
I built a business.
Met the payroll.
I enter this office beholden to no one except you.
I will owe my office to no one but you.
I don't owe anyone anything.
I don't owe anyone anything.
It's all about leadership.
This is all about leadership.
Jobs, jobs, and jobs.
Jobs, jobs, jobs. We do not have a revenue problem.
We do not have a revenue problem.
We have a spending problem.
We have a spending problem.
Rebuilding California.
Build a new California.
Rebuild California.
Let's build a new California.
We need to run the state as a business.
Running this thing a little bit more like a business.
What's the worst that can happen?
What's the worst thing that can happen?
Well, that's a very effective spot. And I'm going to put a link to the YouTube page where you can see it for yourself. It's stunning. Moving on now to the offices of state constitutional officers. First up, Lieutenant Governor. As I told you, I was a consultant to John Garamendi, the last elected Lieutenant Governor in California, when he resigned from that office to run for Congress, and he now represents the 10th District of California in Washington. He was ultimately replaced after a long and protracted political struggle by a member of the state Senate, Abel Maldonado. And Maldonado is now trying to win election to the office that he was appointed to. And his Democratic opponent is the mayor of San Francisco, Gavin Newsom. I support Newsom. And he is not a perfect man. While in office, he announced he had an alcohol problem and kind of has kept it quiet, didn't go into rehab, but I guess he has stopped drinking or doesn't drink much. He has a background as a restaurateur and a winery owner. He was funded by the Getty family when he launched those businesses, and they've been quite successful. As mayor of San Francisco, he's more conservative than I like. When he originally ran, it was based on essentially campaigning against homeless people. And it was effective. But as mayor, he stunned the world in breaking down the barriers and permitting gay people to get married. I will forever respect Gavin Newsom for that bold and courageous step. And he doesn't talk about it much in his campaign because about half of voters in California are opposed to same-sex marriage. But I believe, as he articulated, that it is a civil right, and it's simply silly for people to try to impose their religious values in what is clearly a secular and civil issue. Now, the office of Lieutenant Governor, there isn't much there. When I worked for Garamendi, he had plenty of time all day long to consider his political future. And, you're a member of the Board of Regents of the University of California and a trustee of the state college system. There is the State Lands Commission, where you can block offshore drilling. And there's also an Economic Development Council chaired by the Lieutenant Governor. But mainly, you look for opportunities to get media coverage when there are disasters. And you wait for an opportunity to step up and run for governor yourself. Gray Davis did it, but for the most part, most lieutenant governors serve and are forgotten. At his young age, I think Gavin Newsom will use this to build statewide reputation and name ID and hope to run for governor or for the United States Senate, because both of our senators are getting older, and in the next 10 years, it's likely that there will be a Senate opening. So I think Newsom is certainly qualified, and since he decided to run for that office, he earns my support. I do think that it creates a problem in San Francisco. There'll be a one-year interim mayor, but that's politics, and that's how it goes. Down the ballot, Secretary of State Deborah Bowen has distinguished herself as a person committed to improving our election system. She has sharply limited the use of electronic voting machines. She's aware of the risks even of electronic tabulators And she's been the most effective Secretary of State with a top-to-bottom review of voting systems. And I think she has depoliticized that process as much as possible. Her Republican opponent, Damon Dunn, is a rich guy, no political experience, and one of those Republicans who forgot to vote a lot of the time. Deborah Bowen earns my support. State Controller John Chiang, C-H-I-A-N-G, is a man I've talked to on many occasions. He's a straight shooter. He's been very honest, candid, blunt, at critical times as the state has struggled with the lack of a budget and the economic repercussions caused by that. He's opposed by Tony Strickland, a Republican fiscal conservative who would be dangerous in that job. And so I support John Chiang for re-election. Also, it's a no-brainer in the state treasurer race. Bill Lockyer is a long time. He was a member of the assembly, served as the leader of the state Senate with some distinction. He was attorney general. I think he did a great job there, with the exception of pandering on the attempts to amend the draconian three strikes law in this state. And he's been a good treasurer in his first term. My only quibble with Bill is that he's running a TV commercial where he capitulates to the Republican mantra and message of no tax increases. And he scolds his Democratic colleagues for not accepting that. Sorry, Bill, I'm not with you on that, but I will vote for you for re-election. And after all, there isn't much choice there. The race for Attorney General to replace Jerry Brown is hotly contested. Kamala Harris is the San Francisco District Attorney, and she's the Democratic nominee. She's facing off against a hardline Republican law and order guy, Steve Cooley, who is the District Attorney in Los Angeles County. I will support Harris, and I have to say that she's got an uphill struggle here. She's a woman of color. Like me, she's opposed to the death penalty. And they're making a big deal out of two cases where cops were killed, where she refused to seek the death penalty. And while I support her position there, I just have to recognize as a political observer that that is a significant liability. And I hope she pulls this off. So I want to encourage you, if you're on the fence or you've never heard of Kamala Harris, that you take a hard look at her, because I think she would be a much more progressive and better attorney general for California than Steve Cooley. In the race for insurance commissioner, also no real choice there. Dave Jones is a termed out legislator from Sacramento. He worked in the legislature to advance issues that are favorable to consumers, and he has been tough on insurance companies. As a result, Mike Valines, his opponent, a Republican, is getting a lot of support, direct and indirect, from the insurance industry. And this is a very important post for consumers, and we can't allow somebody who is captive to the insurance industry to serve as its elected regulator. So Dave Jones gets my vote. Now, superintendent of public instruction is a nonpartisan post, and both candidates are nominal Democrats. Tom Torlakson is a longtime member of the Democratic Party, served in the Assembly and in the State Senate. He's from the East Bay of San Francisco and has been a strong advocate for education. But because he is a Sacramento insider, I've decided to vote for Larry Aceves. And I also had the opportunity to meet Mr. Aceves when he sat for an interview on the cable TV show that I co-host in Marin County. And you can find that video, if you'd like to look at it, at marinvoicesandviews.com. That's marinvoicesandviews.com. Aceves was on our program in August, and he impressed me as a man who has been in the trenches. He was a school district superintendent, and he really does, I think, understand top to bottom the challenges to our education system in California. So I give the edge to Larry Aceves, and I do encourage you, if you're undecided on that that race between Aceves and Torlakson, to take a hard look and see what you think, because I think Torlakson is qualified, and I wouldn't quibble with you if you have reasons for leaning in his direction. But for me, Aceves impressed me when I met him, and I think that he is the kind of firm but soft-spoken leader who can rally the disparate interests of education in today's climate. So that concludes the look at the candidates for statewide office and the United States Senate. Now we're going to take a look at the ballot measures, nine of them, that are confronting California voters this election season. And to help you, if you want to fast forward through some of these using your player or whatever device you're listening on, I'm going to put a little drum roll at the beginning of my discussion of each ballot measure. Proposition 19 legalizes marijuana under California but not federal law, permits local governments to regulate and tax commercial production, distribution, and sale of marijuana. That Peter Tosh song is decades old, and it's about time that we recognize that marijuana is California's top cash crop, currently worth about $15 billion a year. It employs many people who are illegal, whether they're cultivating, processing, or distributing marijuana. And its use as medicine, I think, while the establishment prevents any real investigation and research into that, is very clear. I'll just cite my relative, Jan, who is suffering from a very deep case of brain cancer right now. And the marijuana teas, the cannabis cookies, have given her great relief, given her an appetite when she hasn't had it from chemotherapy, and relieve the pain that she is struggling with at this time. I think most people know somebody who has benefited from the medical use of marijuana. Proposition 19 isn't perfect, and if it passes, which is now somewhat in doubt, the polling has shifted here late in the campaign. It looked like it was going to pass a month ago, but the law enforcement people, including the Attorney General Eric Holder, the U.S. Attorney General, and others from the Obama administration, plus a lot of cops in California, are spreading a lot of fear and hysteria about what will happen. And it's ludicrous. The war on drugs is a failure. The problems with Mexico, surprisingly, are still largely related to marijuana. Like 60% of the traffic of drugs coming in over the Mexican border are pot. Not cocaine. And the cost of incarcerating people for marijuana-related crimes is irrational and something that we cannot afford in today's climate. And the true cost, there are some people who become addicted to marijuana, but it's somewhere around 10% of users, less than alcohol. Prohibition doesn't work, and it's simply time to recognize that and get beyond the emotional Nancy Reagan mentality and just face up to it. Now, the terms of Prop 19, because they were trying to satisfy so many different interest groups, I think create a patchwork of taxation and regulation that would allow counties and even municipalities to create their own system of regulation, including banning the sale, including banning the possession under local laws. And so it isn't perfect. And I can understand some people who may generally support the legalization of weed who decide not to vote for Prop 19. But in that case, I hope you don't vote against it. And I think that what we're seeing here is that the government recognized this inevitability. And at the end of September, Governor Schwarzenegger signed a new law that essentially decriminalizes pot. I believe it's for up to a couple of ounces of possession. It doesn't bring that economy out of the shadows or out from under the table. But it is recognition that trying to ban marijuana is senseless and useless. And so whether Prop 19 passes and becomes law this November or not, I do think that we've made giant steps toward recognizing the failure of the drug war, the failure of prohibition, and that on a relative scale, marijuana is simply not that dangerous. Proposition 20, redistricting of congressional districts, initiative constitutional amendment. And we'll take this together with Proposition 27, intended to eliminate the State Commission on Redistricting, consolidating authority for redistricting with elected representatives, that's the state legislature, and it's an initiative constitutional amendment and statute. We've covered this on a preceding podcast related to the movie Gerrymandering and the work of the group Common Cause to take the redistricting process away from the legislators who benefit directly from it. And it fascinates me that people who call themselves progressives are opposed to 20 and support 27. And let me recap. That Proposition 20 is built on Prop 11 that passed in 2008, which established a citizen commission. And it's not perfect. As some critics point out, this citizens commission has 14 Democrats and 14 Republicans. And that doesn't appropriately reflect the voter registration in the state. But the way it's written is that the two major parties each get 14 members of the commission. And if the Green Party ever, you know, registered the Republican Party, then it could have 14 seats on that commission. My point is that we do need balance and we need to remove partisanship from the drawing of the maps that create our legislative and congressional districts. And again, we have to see how all of this plays out, but I am convinced that the way we've done it in the past is grotesquely insulting to the voters of California. There is no district in this state, either for the Assembly, the State Senate, or for Congress, that doesn't reflect the partisanship of the people who drew those districts. I don't know if you know this, but the current map in California was drawn by a guy named Mike Berman. Mike Berman is the brother of Congressman Howard Berman, a powerful Democrat from the San Fernando Valley near Los Angeles. And this map is ugly. And it is designed to protect incumbents, both Democrat and Republican. For example, in this year's congressional races, there are 53 seats in California, and it'll either stay that way or we might actually lose one in the remapping based on the 2010 census. But out of 53 districts, only three of those seats are in any kind of competitive contest. And that means that 50 members of Congress are literally guaranteed their re-election. Think back a few years when Duke Cunningham was convicted of graft, extortion, bribery. Well, during the time that he was charged and those controversies were in the air, he ran for re-election in 2004, I believe, or 2006. It's a little fuzzy now. But despite the controversy, he handily won re-election because the district was drawn to make sure that there were enough Republican voters that a Democratic challenger couldn't knock him off. And in the special election that followed the resignation of Duke Cunningham, a Republican lobbyist, Brian Bilbray, was able to take that seat, even against a pretty strong challenge from a woman named Francine Busby. And there were all kinds of shenanigans when the Republican Secretary of State certified Bilbray as the winner of that election before the election count had been completed. And there were challenges to that election count, but they could not be heard because the Secretary of State had affirmed his election and Bilbray was sworn in, and that was the end of the story. And yet, my friends at Calitix, my friends at the Courage Campaign, the Progressive Democrats of Los Angeles, and many other groups that call themselves progressive are standing with incumbent Democratic legislators saying, well, yeah, this system stinks, but it favors us. And if we change it, we might lose a seat or two. And I'm sorry. Nobody under our system is guaranteed re-election. And this gerrymandering system permits that to occur. So I will be parting company with many of my alleged progressive friends. I will be voting for Proposition 20 to expand this Citizens Commission to include the congressional districts, and that will be in force for the next 10 years, and to oppose the cynical Prop 27 put forward by Speaker Pelosi and by Karen Bass, who is guaranteed election to a congressional seat in Southern California, and most of the other members of the congressional delegation who have put some of their campaign money, since their seats are safe, into Prop 27, trying to ensure that their seats remain safely in their hands. So I urge you to think carefully about Prop 20 and about Prop 27. Give this Citizens Commission a chance. Because if they draw a map that is inappropriate, I will personally be party to a lawsuit to overturn it. And it's likely that the cynical leaders and the incumbents will challenge an honest map if one is drawn. And so there's a good possibility this will wind up in the courts, as happened in the 1990s, and a special master will be appointed to try to balance out the issues. But I hope that voters will see through this. Prop 11 only passed by a point or two in 2008, and because of the confusion around 20 and 27, it's possible that voters will be misled or confused, and that we'll see Prop 27 pass, which would not only neutralize Prop 20, but would neutralize Prop 11, which passed 2 years ago. So, to recap, I'll be voting yes on Prop 20, no on Prop 27. Proposition 21 establishes an $18 annual vehicle license surcharge to help fund state parks and wildlife programs, and it grants surcharge vehicles free admission to all state parks. What a deal! It's kind of sad that it's come to this. But in the last two or three budget cycles, the state park system in California has been threatened with deep, deep cuts. And we have a lot of parks in this state, and many of them are real treasures. And they deserve to be adequately funded. And I think $18 a year tacked on to my license plates is a really good deal. Some parks now cost $6 to get your car in. So three entries a year into state parks will pay for this tax for each individual license plate holder. Now, there are some editorialists who have opposed this because they're opposed to having these earmarked special taxes and taking the parks out of the state budget general fund. And I think that's bogus, because I believe that if we don't pass this, the state parks will be left to languish. And it's not just toilet paper in the bathrooms. It's the rangers. It's protecting the parks from various kinds of exploitation, including logging, mineral extraction, and in some cases, growing pot in the state parks. So I think it's a reasonable measure. It's only $18 per car per year. And the trade-off of free admission, I think, is the real sweetener. So I'm going to be voting yes on Proposition 21. Proposition 22 prohibits the state from borrowing or taking funds used for transportation, redevelopment, or local government projects and services. It's an initiative constitutional amendment. This also is an outgrowth of the state budget problems. And in the past 4 years, under the stewardship of failed Governor Schwarzenegger, we have seen all kinds of budgetary monkey business. And the state has used different techniques to shift costs to counties, municipalities, and other local government entities without providing money to pay for those costs. And in some very gross cases of grand theft, the state has simply taken revenues from counties and other local government agencies, including redevelopment agencies, including the transportation funding that comes out of the gas tax that was specifically earmarked for highway building and repair. And I do have some mixed feelings about this initiative, because I think that this is something the legislature should have control over. But the legislature has botched that responsibility. And this gets into other arguments that I won't go into today about the way the legislature continually fails in its responsibilities and leaves voters to fend for themselves and try to fix them through the kind of meat axe approach of the state initiative process. It's also a process that is susceptible to hijacking by corporate and other special interests. But I'm going to be voting for Prop 22, because we need to put up a firewall to prevent Sacramento from stealing money from the counties and other local government agencies. And because of Prop 13, this gets into another much more expansive argument, but local agencies have been starved for revenues since the 1970s. And in flush times, Sacramento was doing what they called backfilling. They were passing money to the counties to help them pay for their costs. But that's gone. And it's one thing for the state to stop backfilling. It's another thing to stop backfilling and then take money from local sales tax and other revenue streams. Education has suffered. Many other issues. For example, in my home county of Marin, every town has a special ballot measure tax initiative on the ballot this fall to pay for ambulances and paramedics. That is a fundamental service of local government. But the funding for it has eroded because the state has failed to live up to its responsibilities. And again, I have mixed feelings about this, but I will be voting for Prop 22. Proposition 23 suspends implementation of air pollution control law AB 32, requiring major sources of emissions to report and reduce greenhouse gas emissions that cause global warming, until unemployment drops to 5.5% or less for a full year. Initiative statute. Well, this is perhaps the most corporate and cynical measure on the ballot this year. And it's gotten a lot of attention. And it should be opposed. It's been bought and paid for by the Koch brothers, two billionaires who own oil and gas and other resource-based industries. By the way, many of which classified as small businesses by Senator Mitch McConnell when he tries to talk about the expiring tax breaks at the end of this year. Together with the Koch brothers, Valero and Tesoro, two Texas-based oil companies, have put Prop 23 on the ballot. They paid for the signature gathering. They're paying for massive media campaigns to pass it. And fortunately, I think that most Californians see what's going on with Prop 23. Now, I want to link it to Prop 26, because 26 is the sleeper that is supported by the very same interests with the addition of the Chamber of Commerce. And Prop 26 requires that state and local fees must be approved by two-thirds vote. Fees include those that address adverse impacts on society or the environment caused by the fee payer's business. Now, that's the legal ease that explains to you that AB 32, Schwarzenegger's air pollution control law, attempting to combat global warming, requires fees for it to work. And the way the legislature is currently composed, those fees would not pass if Prop 26 is passed, which then requires a two-thirds vote. Currently, the legislature can raise fees by a simple majority, and they haven't abused that, I have to say. I mean, fees have crept up at the university system, and there are some things like the fees on your phone bill and the fees on your cable bill that have started to creep up. But overall, I don't believe that Sacramento has abused the fact that fees only require a majority vote. But this effort to impose a supermajority essentially allows veto power by the minority. And this is the measure that doesn't have a big budget opposing it, and that many people are not paying attention to. So I encourage you to take a close look at Prop 26, link it to Prop 23, and vote against. I will be voting against both of them, and I hope you'll consider that, because if 23 is rejected, but 26 passes, we'll still have a great deal of difficulty moving forward in a meaningful way to reduce carbon emissions and to address global warming. And just one more point about Prop 23. The clause in it that says that AB 32 would be essentially suspended until unemployment drops to 5.5% or lower for a full year. That's as far as the eye can see. We haven't had unemployment under 5.5% for a full year, to my knowledge, in at least 20 years, if not longer. And that is the standard that they set, saying, oh, we're only suspending it. It's about jobs. It's to protect jobs. Well, that's bullshit. And they know it, and I hope that voters know it, because these are not people who are interested in the jobs of anyone except some corporate executives and some billionaire investors. I'll be voting no on 23 and no on 26. Proposition 24 repeals recent legislation that would allow businesses to lower their tax liability. I'll be voting no on Prop 24. And I've taken a pretty close look at this, and this gets into the weeds of tax law. And as the owner and operator of a small business for more than 25 years, and as somebody who studied the tax code, yes, I went to night school at a community college to learn about business taxation. And while I'm not a CPA, and I don't do taxes for other people, I do my own taxes. And I know what the issues are in this particular ballot measure. It has to do with losses and tax credits, and it amounts to more than $1 billion of giveaways to business interests in California. The commercials are on the air now, promoting Prop 24, and saying that it's all about jobs. Once again, this is bullshit. It is an attempt to divert your attention from the tax benefits that corporate and other business owners would enjoy. And in simple terms, it has to do with carrying forward or carrying back losses that are incurred. Let me give you an example. If I lose $100,000 in my business this year, under current California law, well, let me correct that, because the current law is what this would repeal. So under the law before this measure was passed in 2008, so the standard that was in effect before then, you could not carry back losses. So my $100,000 loss in calendar 2010 could not be used to get me a refund for taxes that I paid in 2009 or 2008. The law passed in 2008 would permit this. Again, the law that would be repealed by Prop 24 would currently allow me to get a refund from the broke state of California by applying losses that I got this year to tax years where I actually made a profit. And under federal law, carrybacks and carryforwards do exist. And the attempt by the business interests in passing this legislation that Schwarzenegger signed in 2008 was to make California more business-friendly by allowing the maneuvering of these losses to reduce tax liabilities for business interests. The other piece of it relates to tax credits and the ability of companies that have multiple divisions or a holding company that has many subsidiaries to essentially trade losses or trade tax credits to the subsidiary that can use them to advantage at a given time. Here's an example. If I had a holding company with five different subsidiaries, three of them are profitable, two of them are not. The law that went into effect in 2008 that Prop 24 would repeal would allow me to move the losses and tax credits from one subsidiary, the one that's losing money, to one of the profitable ones in order to reduce my taxes. This is not only unfair to the citizen taxpayers, the working families of California, but it favors bigger businesses over small businesses. Because your average gas station owner or local grocery store owner or a real estate office, you don't have the benefit of multiple subsidiaries to move your losses and tax credits in order to reduce the taxes of your profitable enterprises. And so while Prop 24 is a special project of the California Teachers Union, the CTA, and some people oppose it just because they don't like the union, I think it's sensible on both a tax equity basis and relative to the needs of the state treasury this year and in the foreseeable future. So I will be voting in favor of Proposition 24. And finally, for your consideration, Prop 25 changes legislative vote requirements to pass budget and budget-related legislation from two-thirds down to a simple majority. It retains the two-thirds vote requirement for taxes. And this is an initiative constitutional amendment. I favor this, and I've favored it for a long time. I am sorry that it only goes halfway, because I believe that with the gridlock we've had in Sacramento and the minority rule enjoyed by those who are under oath to Grover Norquist, that is the Republicans in the legislature, that we've not only been unable to pass a budget, we have been unable to pass tax increases when California desperately needs them. And so for me, this is very simple. It has been a mistake. California is one of, I think, only two or three states in the country that has a two-thirds or even more than a majority requirement to pass a budget. And if you need an example to illustrate this, go way, way back to this year. Yes, 2010. The governor and the legislature dawdled, procrastinated, and put off the inevitable for 100 days. They're supposed to have a budget passed by July 1st. And it didn't happen until nearly the 1st of October. And the budget they did pass is a joke. It's insulting to any Californian to imagine that they did their job. And they couldn't do their job because of the obstructionist, right-wing, pro-business, low-tax Republicans. And so this is a must pass, I believe, for California. We have got to end the gridlock. We have to stop the minority rule by radical, pro-business, low-tax extremists. And we have to give the next governor and the incoming legislature the opportunity to pass a budget with a simple majority vote. And I acknowledge that there's a partisan benefit here, that it will give Democrats much stronger control over the budget than they've had in past years. And my friend Bill Bagley, a retired Republican legislator, the endangered species, a moderate Republican, Bill is opposed to this because he likes the way that the two-thirds requirement forces the majority to deal with the minority. But when the minority is lockstep obstructionist and has been for three straight years, we can't allow that to continue. And so, Mr. Bagley, I must disagree with you. I will be voting in favor of Proposition 25 and hope, just hope, that next year we don't have a 100-day delay that puts our bond rating at risk, that requires the state to issue IOUs, and that ends up giving us a budget that's meaningless. Because built into this budget are gimmicks and optimistic projections that really mean that the next budget cycle will start off, like the last three or four have, with a $15 to $20 billion deficit. And the only way to get back on track, the only way to have reasonable, rational budgets in the state of California is to change the supermajority requirement and reduce that to a simple majority. That's Proposition 25, and I'll be voting for it. Well, this concludes my rambling review of the ballot for California voters this November. I know that large numbers of you vote at home using mail-in ballots, your permanent absentee. So I hope that you'll listen to this before you vote. And I hope that while I can influence your thinking, that you understand that I do not wish you to vote for something simply because I say so. I hope to provoke you with my analysis and my views into thinking carefully before you vote. Thanks for listening. And we'll see how it all turns out on November 3rd. Send me an email, peter@peterbcollins.com.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. keep smiling and